the leak was trying, they were trying to like immunize the stock because it didn't affect Microsoft stock. But
yeah, who knows? That's pretty funny. But wow, you get, nobody could believe it. It was just like, that's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, you, little do you guys know. That was good.
So I'm Jake with 8bitjoysticks.com, and I'm sitting down with Marty O'Donnell of Bungie.
Right.
Hi.
And so before you got into video games, you actually, so in making Flintstones jingle.
Yeah.
Did you, but I saw that like on Wikipedia, you own the copyright on that.
No, not on Flintstones, but in commercials, you still are an you can be an ASCAP composer, which means you're always the writer, and that you can get the what they call the writer share of performance royalties. And I write the jingle and then I sell it for a creative fee to the agency and on behalf of their client, and then anytime it's ever rearranged or redone or whatever, I'll be credited as the composer, even if it's a different arrangement.
Cool. I love the sort of the riff off that on the beginning of the Bungie podcast.
Yeah.
And second question, it came out that Frankie is leaving Bungie for Microsoft.
Right.
And I know that based on the thing, they have the rights for the Halo series, and they can make derivative games. And do you think that this is sort of a good thing for the future of Halo, or is this just a sidestep? Or feel free to say no comment if you can't comment.
No, I mean, I think like Shane said yesterday, we still have a good relationship with Microsoft.
Right.
They own the IP. We understand that. More power to them. Whatever they need to do, if they can keep that going. We're still working in the Halo universe, so... we feel like there's things that we can do, and they're hoping to do some stuff too. And we're not going to be working, let's say, directly with them on their projects. That's up to them now to figure out what they're going to do. But we still talk to them and help at times, and we'll see what happens. So we're looking forward to seeing some new content and then stories being told in the Halo universe that we have nothing to do with.
But
we'll see how it is.
Is my understanding that it's possible for, should there be a fourth a canonical Halo game, that Bungie has the option of being involved in it or
yeah,
doing
that,
it?
That's something I can't talk about.
Right,
but
right.
Like I said, we love making Halo killers.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Halo itself has killed the previous Halo,
yeah.
So that's always good too.
Yeah, that was a very good quote I got down there. So, so it's like, where do you see Bungie going in 5 years?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to give you a general quote, which
sure.
I believe is a brilliant quote on my part, and I think it's hard for a lot of people to understand. I feel really strongly. Are you getting this?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Just double checking.
All right. I feel really strongly that those who create the IP own the IP even after they sell it.
Right.
So if you understand what I mean by that.
It's sort of like, I sort of think Rock Band is sort of the child of guitar, even though they've
yes.
sold the IP
yes.
rights to
right.
Activision.
Mm-hmm.
It's the real spiritual descendant.
Yeah.
Of the...
So you're absolutely right. I'm speaking on a spiritual
right.
level. But if you're the one who came up with an idea, or let's say I'm the one who, as a composer, I come up with a musical theme or a melody, just because somebody, you know, like you said, even with like the Flintstones vitamins, that jingle I wrote.
Right.
And I wrote that melody, and it's my melody, even though I sold it. And I feel the same way about Halo music, and I feel the same way. I think the entire Bungie team feels that way about what they've created, which is the Halo story and Halo franchise and the Halo IP. We feel very spiritually connected to that IP. We don't own it anymore, but, you know, it's our baby, so it means a lot.
And even going back, I started playing Marathon
sure.
back in the day, so
mm-hmm.
seeing sort of
mm-hmm.
the little Marathon references.
Yeah, again. we have Marathon again, by the way.
A Marathon XBLA.
And not only that, but it's our IP, so that's
yes.
good. Yes. I would just say that in the next 5 years, Bungie, you know, we don't want to do licensed titles, and anything we do in the Halo universe doesn't feel like a licensed title to us because we feel like it's still our baby. We'll see what happens with that. It's probably, you know, something that has to be negotiated and so forth. But when it comes to new IP, that's the reason we went independent, because we just feel like we just do a lot better if we know we have a greater amount of creative control and, you know, even business control over the stuff we create.
So that sort of dovetails into my fourth question, which is about the sort of the split of Bungie going independent again. Is are there some of the reasons that you can talk about that?
Well, I think it pretty much boils down to what I just said. Yeah. If you're the ones who create something, and trust me, I mean, I think Microsoft is a great publisher to work with. They were very hands off, especially when it came to the creative side of things. But we, you know, we feel like we have a very close connection to our fans, and we would like to be able to continue to make decisions about, you know, where we go in this universe or where we don't go in this universe into the future. And if you don't really have that kind of control, it's hard to do. Plus, I would say the other thing is a pretty simple one, which is, like Jason Rubin was saying this morning, there's an entrepreneurial spirit at Bungie, and they sort of want to like be out there and either fail gloriously or succeed beyond their wildest expectations, which is kind of hard to do when you're an employee of a giant corporation.
And it's been I work for a giant corporation. But it's been like over 10 years since Bungie, or since the Halo has been.
Well, we started working on Halo back in the. Man, I remember starting to work on it in 97, I think we really went full-time making sure it was a real thing in 98. We introduced it to the world at Macworld 99. But Microsoft bought us in 2000, so we were Microsoft employees for 7 years.
Yeah.
And you know, seven's always been one of our magic numbers at Bungie, and we figured that was it.
Well, sort of dovetails into two little questions. I heard, like, can you guys still shop at the Microsoft employee store?
You know what? That's funny. We actually asked about that, and I can't remember what the deal is.
Right.
I think we ended up having to give that one up.
Okay.
I don't think we get the employee discount anymore, but we got something that makes up for that, but I don't remember what it is.
I also heard that on the Monday that I sort of had my leak and thing about that the locks on the doors were either being changed or there was an annual maintenance, and just if that was
there are certain things that will happen that we will realize, oh, you know what, not everybody that used to just walk in and not everybody's key card that used to work probably should work anymore, so we clamped down on that. You're probably right. I have a feeling that Monday we made sure that some key cards stopped working.
Now, how has employee retention been for? That's what one other one of the thought for. Like trying to go independent. Has it been successful in trying to keep the people who are Bungie on board in this period of massive transition?
Well, the interesting thing is that Bungie, for 7 years, we were wholly owned, just employees, but we kept the name Bungie and we kept sort of branding the concept of Bungie to our fans, and internally we really try to keep ourselves insulated from, you know, the Microsoft amoeba, and because of that, I think the retention rate when we went independent is through the roof. It's just really huge. And as a matter of fact, I think the day we had to keep all the negotiations very, very secret, because as you can imagine, corporations don't negotiate with employees, right? So,
right.
I mean, it was a very, very hard thing to do, but both sides, I think, were really good about it. We kept it very secret, and it went on for a long time.
Right.
It had been going on for a matter of years.
I've been speaking to some people that were, like, from second-party developers for Sony, and they were talking about, like, it's really sort of an industry first. I mean, a first-party or a second-party developer becoming independent again.
That's well, we're happy to be the first on that one. I remember telling the guys, it's like, look, if Bungie can't do it, nobody can do it. So let's give it a shot. But the day that we we went into the Kirkland Performance Center. Do you know where that is?
Yeah.
So that, which is right, pretty much next to us. And we brought all the employee Bungie guys over there, probably 120 people in the audience. And Harold, the studio manager, got up and had a PowerPoint presentation to say, okay, here's what's going on. And Shane was actually there. Mm-hmm. Shane was in the audience. And when I think he had a slide that was like, you know, Bungie is a Microsoft corporation, and as of today, Bungie is an independent corporation. And instant cheers. Everybody stood up, standing ovation, and everybody went with us.
Now,
so we've had, you know, right. There's been a few attrition things here and there.
He sort of said it's an interesting relationship. It's like you guys are almost closer. Microsoft has the first rights of refusal and still wants to be the publisher.
Wow, did he give all that kind of deal?
No, actually? That was other stuff that I've read.
Oh, well, that's not really true.
No, okay. Okay, good.
Yeah. You know, that doesn't mean that we're not talking to them about everything we do, but you have to be careful with what you mean by rights of first refusal.
Okay.
And stuff like that, because that I can't get into any details, but it's not those kind. Everybody at Bungie realizes that independence, you know, means that there is that possibility of being more successful when you're successful, but there's a price to be paid, which is if you fail, then there could be some pain.
Yeah.
And I think the majority of the guys at Bungie, that's the kind of people they are, and that's what they want.
So
the vast majority.
Should they actually, you know, the joke about pimps at sea, if you actually made...
Which, by the way, we own that IP.
Yes, yes, I know. what would the music for Pimps at Sea be like? I've always wondered that.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of sea shanties and, you know, Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald kind of stuff. Or maybe a little... You know, I don't think Pirates of the Caribbean would be too overblown. I think, you know, good old...
Yeah, I was thinking like 70s Motown.
Well, maybe, and with a little mix of Motown. And that's an excellent idea. I'll steal that from you.
Yeah. And so what's it been like to deal with the Halo Nation? Bungie's always done like incredible job with trying to relating to their fans.
Yeah. You know what? That's we didn't coin the phrase Halo Nation. That's I think a Microsoft marketing guy who came up with that. But you know, we'll take it. To us, it's been the Bungie fans that we care the most about. We want to train all of the huge Halo players to understand that we made Halo,
mm-hmm.
and that if you want more good stuff in the future, you should check out what Bungie's making, because in the past we made some other cool things too, and in the future our Halo things are going to be really great, and our things that are non-Halo are also going to be really great. So it's a little bit of a tricky thing right now, because there are probably a large part of the public that thinks of Halo and they think Halo's the brand. And frankly, I believe Bungie's the brand and Halo's the product. So
yeah.
Now that we're independent, we can actually work a little bit harder to make sure that, you know, Bungie fans, Halo fans are one and the same, and whatever we do, they'll be happy with.
See, I've been a big fan of, like, Myth. I love Myth.
Good.
And I still Me hope too. They can work it out on making, like, an Xbox Live version of Myth.
I agree.
Of Myth. And so Take-Two has the publishing rights, but...
Take-Two still has the rights to Myth and Oni.
Yeah.
So...
Once
again, though, there you go. That's that spiritual problem again,
yeah.
Right? It's like I still think of Oni and Myth as our baby. And
I found that the audio, and I'm kicking myself for not bringing my Myth 2 soundtrack.
Oh, I'd sign it in a heartbeat.
Because it's
sure.
Like the
there's not a lot of those out there, by the way.
I'm also a Mac gamer, so it's
okay,
that was
good.
Like one of the few major games, and it's like I love the sort of the cinema the sort of the documentary style, and use the music and the cutscenes and everything,
oh,
sort of try and build and mm-hmm. follow a story, and
mm-hmm.
you sort of cared when you got slaughtered by the undead. So how has making audio for games and music changed from like the move of generations from like the Mac and PC to Xbox to
right.
360 and whatever?
For me, it's been an evolutionary change, because I think we have always worked at the edge of what the technology allowed us to do. So even on Mac and PC, we were still trying to do a lot of the principles we have now of trying to transition seamlessly, of trying to make the player feel something through music, of trying to make the sound design and dialogue as compelling and non-repetitive as absolutely possible. And with each generation of technology, you just have more voices that you can use, better fidelity, you know, all of those things, you know, more channels of sound. And, you know, once we've got to, like, the Xbox, being able to do surround sound was a huge, huge advance. But I don't think it was, you know, I think if you played Myth or Myth 2 on a really good system or Riven on a good system, you had a really immersive audio experience. And playing Halo on the Xbox, you know, to me, one of the, we just had more technology to do to improve every area that we were trying to improve. And the real-time surround sound was one of the coolest things we were able to do. Finally, we were able to have things whiz by your head, or you could tell where the warthog was driving from behind you or to the front of you or left or right or whatever.
And yeah, I love
all that stuff was just a really cool advance. I still think overall it's pretty evolutionary for the most part. There are still puzzles of, you know, like the aesthetic puzzle of how to be really compelling interactive audio. I'm still trying to solve the same problems I started solving in 1996, and so I think we're just getting better and better at it. Fidelity, of course, is probably one of the biggest improvements. Just
so how's it sort of trying to do audio with the big mix of voice being Xbox Live voice getting in there? And
yeah, you know what?
Have.
We just it was funny you'd say that because we just were trying out some brand new headphone things yesterday. Something I've always been asking for is the ability to hear the voice. You have a microphone, have headphones that allow you to have 5:1 mix in your headphones, and then hear your voice and everybody else's voice through your headphones. You know, so at the same time you're hearing the entire game. As it is, the way it was originally designed...
There's a couple things that are like that in the market, but they're pretty pricey.
Yeah,
and not a lot of people
and
have those.
The original way that was designed is they gave us this incredible opportunity to have a 5:1 surround sound audioscape. And then when Xbox Live came in and they're like, yeah, you know, you should be playing Halo in surround sound so you can hear if the guy's behind you reloading, right? And then you can turn around and get him. But as soon as you put voice on, you... actually clog up one up one ear, and the voice channel is real low res, mm-hmm. and you know, so now you're only hearing out of one ear and you're talking into a microphone, and it just kind of wrecked the experience for me. I just didn't like the way that was working, so I think there's a lot of room for improvement there. It's, you know, bandwidth and voice quality is a huge technical hurdle that is still being solved.
It's weird. I have someone on who started reading my website, and he's a teenager who lives in United Arab Emirates. And
oh, wow.
He loves Halo, and so it's like occasionally we'll have Halo matches.
Oh, excellent.
And, you know, and he's like 13 hours away.
Wow.
On the other side of the
world.
That's great
that works.
And it's sometimes we have to do a one-on-one
due to
a lag, but that's probably on his part. But yeah. I love the seeing on Halo 3 the sort of the world map and showing where all the...
Who's on and
where, and
that was one of our I think one of our guys, Roger. He's this great programming guy that is really connected online with, and his ideas are, he's like, hey, we should have a world map that shows where everybody is. Like, well, can we do that in real time? So it's pretty cool.
Well, I've sort of listened to like the Major Nelson podcast, and it's sort of weird to see how Halo has evolved, moved, you know, the platform. It's moved the platform of live and online, and it's really sort of been the one of the moves. Anyway,
yeah.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say before I wrap up?
No, this
I know
is
you're
good.
Probably starving, and
no.
I'd like to really thank you very much
for interviewing. This is great.
And
what's up for you?